What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Stage Right podcast. We have my good friend, a sneakerhead, tour manager, just all around amazing guy, Noah Brown. And we are so excited to talk to you. How are you doing today, Noah?
Incredible. Thank you, boys, for having me.
Dude, of course. Where are you calling in from?
I am in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow. Nice. The dirty South.
Yes. The humidity has broken and it is absolutely beautiful.
Let's go.
I feel that. I'm down in Florida, so. Oh, yeah.
Where in Florida are you at?
Fort Lauderdale.
Got it. Got it. I've spent a lot of time at Cape Coral.
Down, oh, okay, yeah. So, west side.
Down in the
it's
west
beautiful
side.
Beautiful out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you all so much for having me.
Yeah. So as we always do, we're going to jump right in.
Love it.
Big question. That's all that matters. How do you prepare a bagel in the morning? Most important question.
Oh, all right. So, like,
yeah, what kind of bagel you go for? The schmear?
Oh, you go
any toppings?
I mean, I don't think it's any question. I mean, it's always in everything for me every single time.
Yes,
it's always in everything every single time. And I'm a chive cream cheese guy on it.
Chive.
Oh, I am.
Oh. Damn.
I am.
Everyone's changing it up, man. Every single podcast is a different answer. This is crazy.
Yeah, no, I'm a chive cream cheese and everything guy. Very particular about my toasting on it, too.
Explain.
Yeah.
Listen, I look at the settings hard. I look at the settings hard, and I know when it's been moved. and I'm not afraid. Like, if it goes a little too long, like, it'll really piss me off, and I won't salvage it. I'll throw it, and I'll start over again. You know, I'm not a big morning guy, so it's like the smallest thing it'll ruin my day. So that's where I am. I'm glad that you start with bagels because it's a big topic in my life.
It's how we start our mornings. It's how we start the podcast, you know.
Absolutely. So is that it? It's just a bagel, chive, everything bagel. That's it?
Everything bagel, chive cream cheese. That's it. That's my go-to.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Keep it simple.
We got to talk about your thoughts on my strawberry cream cheese on a cinnamon raisin bagel.
I mean, listen, I don't hate it. I don't know if I could pull the trigger on it. I mean, that's like, see, I'm weird with food, man. Like, I'll eat a lot of stuff, but there's like the sweet savory thing. It's weird for me. Listen, I just tried pineapple pizza for the first time, and I'm still confused about it. I still don't know. It's up in the air.
Oh,
I dig the pineapple pizza. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know how I feel about it. It's been like a month and I'm kind of letting it sit in a little bit. But I mean, listen, I adore you and I'm not going to judge you for your cream cheese choice, but strawberry is strange.
No, we can still be friends. Me and Chris are still friends. We disagree about the strawberry cream cheese though.
Got it. Carlos, heavy. I mean, what do you go for? What's your go-to?
Dude, I like, of course, an everything bagel and classic cream cheese or the chive or something still salty on the salty side.
I don't hate that. I mean, now what are your thoughts? This is a new phenomenon for me too. The whipped cream cheese.
Yo, it's in the fridge right now. My girl is all about the whipped.
Really?
But honestly, okay. My favorite is the lox, dude. I just go lox, lox bagel. Just fucking everything bagel, cream cheese. I'll throw some avocado if I have it. And then the smoked salmon, of course. I've been digging this barbecue style.
Mm-hmm. So it's barbecue style smoked salmon?
A little smoked, extra smoked. It's delicious. Oof. And then you throw some capers on top. Oof.
Man.
Yeah, man.
That's
how you do it.
This is why we need Noah as our tour manager, so we can just get the most epic bagels in the morning, every single morning.
Every morning.
Dude, it would just be a bagel competition every time.
I can't tell you how many gigs I've been on that is, I'm 90% sure that the band feels like that's my number one priority is finding coffee every morning. Like, yes. I don't think they think that I do anything else. Like, all they ever talk about, and they've gotten to the point where they don't even ask me, like, what time is soundcheck anymore. Finally, I think I've gotten out of that because I've yelled at enough people, but it's always like, where's the closest coffee shop? I've turned into like a walking Yelp.
Do you have a favorite one? Do you go to home and on tour?
I think Bluestone in LA is like, that's my spot. That's my spot.
I think for Los and I, it's Seattle. There's some good shops in Seattle.
There are some good shops in Seattle. Yeah.
Storyville and
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, dude. They've got Stumptown.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh.
Oof. That is the best. Oh, I love that coffee, dude. Yeah, Portland's just full of them too.
And I'm a New England guy, so I'll always say Dunkin' Donuts. And I'll take the Dunkin' every day.
So before we get too deep into the food, coffee game, all that stuff, I know it's gonna go further on. And the sneaker game too, because I know Noah loves his sneakers. Mm-hmm. I still have my Pegasus reissues sitting over there on the shelf.
No, you don't. Oh,
wow. Had them ready.
Noah made me buy these. They're in mint condition.
Oh, my God. You still have them.
Oh, dude, I keep them.
They're so clean.
Dude, they're special to me, man. Noah and I bought them together.
I mean, those are incredible. I can't believe you still have those.
Oh, yeah, dude. Look at that. They look like they're brand new.
I was going to say, have you ever worn them?
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. All the time, actually. I just take really good care of them because they're special.
What do you fucking wrap them in plastic bags?
No. I wear them out in Minnesota, dude, in the snow.
Behave yourself. No, you don't.
Yeah, I have.
Oh, my God. They're
important. It was a fun thing that Noah and I used to always go to the malls. That's what we did on tour.
It's true. That was our stress relief.
I know. And Noah made me buy those. He saw them and said, you have to get those.
It's true.
Dude, those are solid, man.
All right, but so we haven't even said really what Noah is or does. So Noah is an amazing man who is a great friend, and he is a tour manager for a bunch of massive bands. And I want to talk about how you started in this industry, how you got into it, because you have a really, really great kind of entry story.
Yeah, it was weird, man. I've always wanted to work in music. And it's funny because, like, I'm a big movie guy. So, like, my favorite movie growing up was That Thing You Do. Right.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's a great, right? What a great movie.
And like, I always wanted to be Tom Hanks in that movie. Like, I wanted to be, wanted to find a way to be like involved in music, but behind the scenes. So nobody knew who I was. And I always wanted to be Tom Hanks, and I still want to get a pair of like the black shades to go with it. But, yeah. So like, I had a business degree. I'm not musical in any sense. So I just kind of try to find a position to work my way in with. And I actually ended up Googling a bus company about 11 years ago. And I don't even remember what company it was, but they had an entire registry of references from like 35 tour managers on their website. And all their emails were on there. So I sent them.
Wow.
Yeah. So I sent like this, I drafted this email up that was like, you know, introduce myself and, you know, I'll fly myself, you know, anywhere. I'll put myself in a hotel. Just, you know, let me walk around with you for a day and check it out. And I sent it out to all of them. And about a week later, I had one response come back from a guy named Dave Brown. And he was basically like, I was in Portland, Maine at the time. And he's like, you know, I'm coming through Portland, Maine in 2 weeks. You know, come out to the Civic Center and spend the day with me. So I was super stoked. So I went out there and, it was with the New Kids on the Block. And so that was kind of wild. You know, I was expecting like a punk band. Like I didn't know who this guy was, but, you know, I did a little deep dive on him and like, this is like the OG of tour managers. Like he did NSYNC and Britney and Justin and, you know, so he was like the guy.
The whole pop world.
Oh yeah. So, you know, I spent the day with him. I don't know why he liked me, but, you know, he was like, you know, we're headed to New Hampshire tomorrow. You want to come do the show? So I drove my car behind the bus that night, and I spent the next night with him in New Hampshire. And then we went down to Connecticut and spent the next night down there. So, you know, we kept in touch after that. And it wasn't long after that he helped me get in touch with some people at American Idol.
Okay.
It was season 10 that they were just finishing, and one of their kids, they had this rock kid on there. People remember him. His name's James Durbin, and people remember him because when he did his performance, when they're allowed to bring another musician out to do a performance with him, he had Zach Wilde, and it was like the most epic thing I've ever seen. Nicest kid in the world. And so I got hired to take him out on his very first tour after Idol. And that's kind of where everything started. That was,
what were you doing on that tour? Tour manager?
Yeah, and it was actually, it was just me and him. He was doing solo acoustic, and it was just me and him, and we went out, and that was my first time by myself. And I told him that I'd been doing it for like 4 years, so it was like a fake it till you make it kind of thing. But it was great. I mean, the Idol people were all great, and it was a very interesting first way in, but. You know, it really built from there. I mean, it was maybe 3 weeks after I got done there, I went out and did a Swedish band called The Sounds.
Oh, dude, I love those guys.
Yeah,
no way.
Yeah, they were so much fun. So much fun.
What year was that?
Oh, my. That would have been...
I remember... I think I worked with them when I was production manager at a venue like 2011.
It was probably around that time.
Dude, no way.
We were doing a promo tour when they came over. Southern California. I think we went as far over as, like, Texas. It was only, like, 3 weeks. But it was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it just, it's funny because it truly is a very small business once you're in it. You know,
yeah.
From the outside looking in,
really
you're like,
is,
how am I going to get in this? And then you land your first gig. And you never stop. And I haven't stopped in 11 years. So it's a blessing.
Incredible.
But yeah, it was, you know, it's weird because I didn't come up, you know, the traditional way, you know, breaking my teeth with 14 Warped Tours and stuff like that, you know. But
that's okay, though. Everyone has their path, dude.
Yeah,
there's no wrong, no right.
Yeah.
Especially in this industry, I feel like. Each path is so unique, and that's, you know, that's one of the reasons we love this podcast, because, dude, hearing these stories, it's amazing of everyone just coming up, and I think the common theme is that there's always somebody that takes you under your wing,
exactly.
And under their wing, you know, like, I like you, I feel like you have it, you have that passion, you have that drive, you know, you light up, there's people that just light up when they're in this industry, dude.
Aww,
you see
friends.
That they care, dude.
That's true.
You see that people care, and that's I think the extra, like, that extra something, you know.
Exactly. No, it's huge, and it's, you know, I owe him everything. You know, we're still very good friends, and he's even called me with, you know, some of his A-listers. You know, if he's not been able to go out, he calls me. You know, so I was, you know, blessed to be able to go out and do, you know, BB Rexha out on the Jonas Brothers tour for him this last winter when he couldn't make it out. And, you know, it's very surreal to get to a point, because I knew that he always liked me as a person. Otherwise, he wouldn't have helped me out. But it's very surreal to get to a point where I'm the guy that he calls when he can't go out, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's
amazing.
A whole nother level that I never expected to get to. But it's a cool feeling when you get there.
100%. So I want to mention this again, that this is our first ever tour manager on the podcast.
Behave yourself.
Yeah.
You are our first. Our
I'm
first
number
call.
One.
You're the first ever tour manager to be on this podcast.
That is one of the greatest honors of my life.
That is not true, but thank you very much.
That's very true. I'm very happy.
Let's talk a little bit about, because we often talk about what a day in the life is for Los and I, or for whoever we have on. So what is the average responsibility day in the life of a tour manager on a large-scale tour?
Man, it's such a loaded question. I guess I would say every client is very different, you know, and I learned to adapt my day around a client. I take a lot of pride in the fact that I'm able to learn a client very quickly. It doesn't take me long to figure out quirks and kind of what their daily rhythm is. You know, I've got some that sleep until noon every day, right? So, you know, what I can do is I can get up at 6 in the morning somewhere, go play a round of golf, come back, start my day there. I have other clients that are horrible without coffee in the morning. So, you know, my morning starts an hour before they wake up, and I make sure I have a coffee ready, because that is how everybody's day is either going to be really good or really bad, depending on how good that coffee is.
Shit trickles downhill, man.
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I like to start my day, you know, either some sort of exercise, something zen, either golf, you know, walking, something like that, just to kind of get myself woken up and away from people. You know, and then I'll get back and get into the office and check my emails for the day, check in with, you know, the PR people, the management, see if, you know, anything's been booked that I haven't seen yet. Make sure that I'm going through my calendar so I know what my day looks like as far as where I need the artist, when I need the artist. Do we have radio promo, any on-site interviews, meet and greet, stuff like that. I memorize everything within the first hour of my day. So I know exactly what I'm doing probably with it, give or take 5 minutes from the time I wake up to 2 a.m. That took a while to learn how to do that. But once I learned how to memorize a day sheet quickly, like I would, I'll literally go through Master Tour and I will make 5 day sheets per day because it sticks in my brain the fifth time that I do it, you know? So that way I remember every single thing. So I never have to look at my phone during a day. I know exactly what's happening.
You're memorizing by writing down. Is that your biggest?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And everything is repetition. Like I'm kind of old school in that regards. Like I will.
I'm the same way. Dude.
Yeah. I mean, it just helps me. You know?
I mean, I've got post-its for days over here on my desk.
Yeah.
That's what I'd be out. Yeah. 20 of them pasted across my desk.
Yeah. And I mean, as a tour manager, like the last thing I think like the cardinal sin for a TM is to not have your day handled right from the get-go. Because if your client ever asks you, you know, what are we doing at 11? I want to go have lunch. And you don't know, that is like the biggest sin on the planet. You know, so you have to be prepared at all times for them to ask you a question. You have to know exactly what they're doing and where they're going, because that's the only way that they know that you're handled the entire day.
That you're on top of everything, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. You know, they, I've learned, and it's the one of the qualities about why I think I'm okay at this is like, I don't have a panic mode.
That's the same with Carlos.
I never have. So it's like, I think that's why, and I know that's why I've kind of got this reputation of working with like younger pop females. It's just about keeping them calm and letting them know that somebody is in control, because they don't want to control anything, right? So as long as they have the feeling that you know what you're doing, even if you're scatterbrained, but if they think that you know what you're doing, you're fine. Everybody's day is going to be great.
That's awesome. Then, of course, we have to talk about the fact that, I mean, I'm a massive fanboy. John Mayer.
Yeah.
Is someone that you work for that has to be a part of this podcast. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Because I've known, we were on tour together with a band called Blues Traveler, who I don't know if any of our younger listeners know. But you were getting texts from John Mayer showing his new solo for his new song while we were on the road with Blues Traveler. I know, it's pretty crazy. So talk a little bit about that. That's and how so that experience cool, has been.
Yeah, I mean, John is one of my favorite humans on the planet, and to this day still. I mean, that was one of the coolest opportunities of my life. I spent 6 years with John. Initially, I had been hired on to be an executive assistant.
What did that exactly like entail?
So, listen, my first day, I want to talk about intimidation, right? I got hired by his guy. I was in Vegas at the time, and I got a phone call on a Tuesday. And it kind of all stemmed through Dave, who brought me into the business. But they were looking for an executive assistant. So basically someone that would handle all of his personal assistant stuff, but I would also travel everywhere with him. So I was with him 360 days for 3 years straight. Like it was, I was with him every minute of every day. So I got the job offer on Tuesday and I said, no, I'm just kidding. I didn't. So I said, I mean, obviously, like, let's do it. So so I was like, you know, when do I start? Like, what's going on? And he was like, his tour manager was the one who hired me. And he was like, all right, so we're going to have you, you and John are going to meet me and his head of security in Germany on Friday. And I was like, this Friday? Like, it's Tuesday now.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it worked out.
That's how
so,
it works.
Yeah. So I literally left the next morning, went out to LA and I was at the hotel that he was at that night. And my instructions were at 8 a.m. the next morning to go knock on this door and I would be taking him to LAX. And his head of security was already in Germany. Like we were literally headed out to do the European festival circuit, starting with Pink Pop.
Wow.
So yeah, it was wild, man. So it was just me and him. His entire team was already over there.
Oh, my God.
So I'd never met him. There was nobody to introduce me to him. So I was just supposed to go knock on his door at 8 in the morning. So I went down, knocked on his door at 8 in the morning. He opens the door, and he's like 11 feet tall. Like, I was blown away. I mean, he's like 6'4". I mean, he's huge. And he was like the nicest dude. And I've never been so nervous in my entire life. So I get him downstairs. We get in the car. We're headed to LAX. We pull up to LAX. And I'm trying to like work with the greeters to get the bags in and get everything checked in so that I can bring him in right after. Get him out of the car. There's paparazzi everywhere. There's people like literally following us down the hallway of LAX. They're walking backwards trying to film him and ask him all these questions. And this is literally like 4 hours after I met him for the first time. And I'm like the only person with him. So it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. But finally we get into this lounge and, he sits me down and we just start talking and he's just literally the sweetest guy ever. But that was like how it all started. That was like my big panic day was having to get John Mayer from LA to Germany by myself. And it was,
wow.
Yeah. That's how things started. But
talk about just an intro.
Oh, it was wild.
Right.
It was wild.
Dude. What a good way to get into it though. Cause then after that, it's like, well, I did that by myself.
Yeah.
When you have a team around you.
It was nerve wracking as anything, wow. But like, I mean, we went and did the festival circuit. It was great. You know, we came back and we started recording for, the new album, which was, you know, it was like the first stages of doing the Search for Everything album, which we were recording in Los Angeles. So we rented a house out there and, he's got the most incredible work ethic of probably any professional I've been around. You know, it's just, you know, you don't figure someone of his stature, you know, you can, you know, roll in and do whatever you want if you don't want to record one day. But, you know, the reason that he got a house in LA to record here was he wanted a schedule. You know, he thought that if he was at his house that he would take days off and sleep in. But being away from home, he had a set schedule every day. You know, so he would have gym time in the morning.
Right.
And he would always get to the studio at the same time. And it was incredible. I mean, the guy works 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. And we would be in there from 2 in the afternoon to anywhere from midnight to 2 in the morning. You know, and you know, that was some of the coolest time was in the studio with him, you know, just getting to watch how he makes music and just the people that also admire his music that would like drop in and say hi, you know, Don was, and, you know, just, you know, Steve Jordan was the producer on the album. So he was in a lot and, you know, Jim Keltner was there a lot, and it you know, the whole experience was just amazing, and it was
surreal, man.
Oh, it was wow. It was incredible, and I'll always call that album my baby. You know, it was I was there, you know, from the very first day. I mean, some of those songs we go back. You know, he's got a song on there. It's my favorite song off the album called "Emoji of a Wave," and I'll never forget. He asked me to go in down to the control room one day to hear this song he was working on. And he was like, "What does this make you feel like?" And I was like, "Man, it's like you're sitting on a beach." And he's like, "Yeah, it's like an emoji of a wave." And we all just kind of laughed. And now the name stuck. And it's just kind of funny to think back on stuff like that. But yeah, I spent 3 years as his assistant. Then after the album was done, I went into a tour management role with his team. So I looked after his band, David Ryan Harris and those guys. So I spent 3 years with those guys. So it was about 6 years total. But man, talk about a well-oiled touring machine. And the crazy part is, like, even after 5 years, like, I was the new guy still. Like, everybody that works for John, his team has all worked for him for 10 plus years. It's all the same people, you know, and
that's how you do it.
Oh, it's, you know, and he takes such great care of people. And
that's what I've heard, man. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the kind of guy that can walk into a venue. He knows everybody by name. He knows who has kids. Like, he asked him about, you know, who had a baseball game this weekend. You know, he's a very personal guy, and people, he's great to be around. He's an incredible boss. But yeah, that was my time with John. It was the best time of my life, to be honest.
Dude, thank you for telling that story, man. That's amazing. How cool to be in both sides of that world, also, like, the studio side and touring.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. His people are great, and, you know, the music was great.
Do you
great.
Have, like, a super memorable day off somewhere? Or?
I think...
Buying Pegasuses with Chris McCone.
No question. It had to be.
No doubt. Hands down.
I think my favorite day off I ever had, and I remember it too, I just spent by myself. I was walking around. My favorite country to tour in is Norway. I love Scandinavia. And I just remember I had a day off in Oslo, and it was summertime, and it was...
Oh, I love Oslo.
It was beautiful out. And I literally just spent the entire day walking around the city. And I think that was probably one of my favorite days off I've ever had. And I didn't even do anything, but it was just beautiful.
That's what I'm looking for, simplicity sometimes, man. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I went into this airplane and jumped out and fucking then parasailed into caves of... Yeah, like, no, dude.
That's funny. One of my greatest days is I had a 26-day, I think it was 26 days, tour in Europe, and it was back-to-back shows. And there was one day where we had, like, it was a travel day, so we got in, like, to Paris at 10, and the guitar player, Chet, from the Eels and I, just got up and just walked through Paris all day.
I love it.
Just eating and drinking. Man. And it was just, you know, we walked until the sun was down. We walked up to that big cathedral overlooking Paris and saw the spotlights circling on the top of the Eiffel Tower. That was just a beautiful
day.
That's
amazing. That's amazing. Yeah,
especially when you're in cities like that, you just don't really even need to do much. You just sit there and sometimes magic just happens in front of you.
No question. How about you? What's your favorite?
I had a really good day off in Toronto one time by myself too. Like, mostly by myself. Later, like, for dinner, met up with, like, everyone else. But yeah, just remember, like, did my own thing, woke up for breakfast, went and got Venezuelan food in Toronto, which is rad. That's where I'm from. So whenever I find it in fucking other cities, I'm like, yes, let's check it out. And yeah, went to record stores. And
those are good days.
I base my days off around that, food and record stores and guitar shops. I love that.
Lowe spends more money on records than I've ever seen anyone spend in my life.
Man, now I want to have a day off with you guys.
Dude, yeah, man.
Food and Records.
Whenever your show's returning, dude, it's gonna be amazing.
Yeah, 2045 will be rad.
It's gonna be a good time. It's gonna be a good time.
We'll all have walkers.
Right. Who knows what the fuck's gonna happen, man. Do you have anything coming up, or have you done anything this year?
I mean, surprisingly, I've been very busy, which is unreal. I mean, I don't think you guys are going to believe this. I actually had a bus on the road from April to July 18th, right?
What?
So I ran the whole thing from my house in Nashville. I had a solo singer-songwriter that partnered with the private jet company Wheels Up, right? So Wheels Up and a charity called Feeding America, right? So basically they had set it up as a charity for Feeding America, and Wheels Up was going to book this solo acoustic musician to go play in the backyards of all of the jet clients across the country. And the jet clients would make a donation, and he would play at their house for like 30 people, completely social distance and everything. And I had six people on the bus. I mean, we ran.
And you were just tour managing remotely.
Yeah, I did all the hotels. I did all the bus parking. I did everything from my house, right? So it was like the coolest experience, because I was still using MasterTour every morning, so it felt like I was working, right? But I could, I could drink. I could like make coffee in my Chemex and drink it on my deck, right?
Oh, that's beautiful.
But yeah, no, it was a cool experience. It was so hard. I knew going into it, we were going to have a lot of challenges, right? But I had no idea. It was constantly every morning was like, what the fuck is going to go wrong today?
Wow.
Right. So like,
yeah, you're not there. So there's even like that extra panic.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, even stuff that we take for granted, like, you know, when I'm booking a tour with a client, when I'm working with a travel agent, you know, we're going through, you know, an entertainment division of a hotel, or, you know, a GM, somebody up top.
Yeah.
All of those have been furloughed across the country. There are no entertainment divisions right now. So I'm picture trying to figure out bus parking with a front desk agent.
Oh.
I just did that for 3.5 months. I mean, these people didn't even know what a tour bus was.
Oh, my God.
Right? So, like, I'm trying to call these people, and, like, a lot of them shut down. You know, there were a lot of, like, major hotels in Austin, New Orleans, that had just closed permanently.
Wow.
So it's like,
holy shit.
I mean, the hotels were challenging. The bus parking was challenging. You know, I was having everybody on the bus. I was setting up COVID tests once a week, wherever they were.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was tricky. But we got through it, and, you know, we ended up donating 1.5 million meals to Feeding America. We gave a great chunk of change to the Steph Curry Foundation with his wife, and some to the Ronald McDonald House. So it was a very rewarding experience, but I think I had the only bus moving on the planet for months. It was kind of wild.
Yeah, that's the first. I haven't heard of that.
It was kind of funny. Yeah, like,
this year.
I wish I could have recorded my conversation back in like late March that I had with one of the bus companies trying to book a bus. Like it was almost hysterical, because I almost got hung up on. They thought I was kidding, and then they thought I was being rude for continuing to kid with them that I needed a bus. and they were just like we did, like all of our buses are, we took them off the insurance. Like, they're not even active buses right now. I had to go through like four companies to find a bus, but it was wild, man. But yeah, no, between that, I've had that going. my business partner and I actually just ventured into the world of management. So we've got this young country kid named Caleb Lovely here in Nashville. What probably one of the top guitar players I've been around, you know.
Except for John Mayer, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, you spend so much time with John and you see this stuff, and like, I've never seen anyone play guitar like this kid, you know. And it's such a cool mix. It's country pop. You know, he's got a very Adam Levine voice, very anthemic Dan and Shay choruses, very country, but he plays everything. So he records everything, wow. He engineers everything, he produces everything, he writes everything, and he plays everything. You know, so it's a very Billie Eilish setup at his house. What he puts out, I mean, he's got Keith Urban guitar chops, and but so we took that on back in March. We just put out our second single, and you know, things are going great on that regard. The business is so weird right now. You know, we knew that there were going to be challenges, obviously, with this, and then we knew that I truly felt that there was going to be an opening, and that there was no better time to try to build a brand than COVID.
Right? 100%. Yeah.
I mean,
which I think is actually true too. I mean, that's what I've done, and what Los and I have done.
Exactly. You know, I've had the opportunity to get him in rooms that probably would not have happened 8 months ago. You know, mm-hmm. These label people are just sitting at their house. You know, yeah. It's not hard to get them on a Zoom call right now because they have nothing to do. Music has literally stopped, you know, so to get label meetings was not difficult. 8-9 months ago, it would have been much harder, you know. And I'm having a lot of luck with radio. I'm getting program directors that will spin new music because there's not a lot being released right now. And that wouldn't have happened 8 or 9 months ago. So,
yeah, I feel like a lot of people are like on a holding pattern
exactly,
on releasing.
Exactly. So it's, you know, you get the goods with that. You know, on the other side of the coin, you look at, you know, these labels do not want to put money out right now, because they don't know when they're going to make money again.
Right.
You know, and they still have, you know, artists that they signed in 2019
yeah.
that they haven't been able to put on the road yet. You know, so now they're just sitting with them losing money.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to put out a record and then
exactly.
tour it like a year or two later. Then
exactly.
it's like not even a new record
exactly.
anymore.
So, you know, the scariest thing is just the unknown, as you guys know. I mean, I think people have come to terms at this point with what's going on and how bad things are. But the unknown is just like not knowing how long this is actually going to go.
Which is why you have to adapt. That's exactly. The biggest thing is learning how to adapt and get new businesses or do management or do podcasts, yeah. You know, whatever you have to do, you have to find a new way to move forward.
Yeah.
And the people who are sitting there waiting in our industry, I think are the ones who are really going to fall by the wayside as soon as things come back.
I agree. I mean, when it comes back, it's going to come back in a big way. I mean, it's inevitable. Yep.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's the same as the travel industry. You know, airlines aren't going to be broke forever. As soon as the green light lifts, everyone's going to fly again. So, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be, but when the green light comes up, it's going to be the busiest touring season of any of our lives. So,
we'll be gone for 3 years and be in high demand.
No question. No question.
All right. So, I got another question for you. This is a big one. This is one for you and Carlos. The sneakers.
Oh.
Because I know Noah's a big sneakerhead. Mm-hmm. Like I said, he got me my Pegasus reissues. I want to know your guys' favorite sneakers. And I want to start with Carlos first.
Dude, I have a pair of Nike collabs with Fragment. They're like a pair of Roches.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, they were like a limited edition and thing from like 2016 or something. And they're just super comfortable. I love the way those shoes look on me. I'm like weird about that.
I
might like some shoes, dude, that I'm like, wow, those look so rad. I love them. Great fucking colors and design. But I try them on myself and I'm like, this ain't me, you know, like there's something.
I get it. That's my life with Jordans. That's my life with Jordans.
Uh-huh. Yeah, same here. But yeah, I love those Nikes a lot. I try to keep them super fresh and clean. And then I would have to say one of my Adidas NMDs or Ultra Boosts.
Oh, yeah.
Because, damn, dude, I'm an Adidas guy.
Oh, so. You're talking dirty now.
No, guys, it's about those Gucci flops, baby.
Oh, let's Lord. Go. Oh, Lord.
You fancy boy. That's nice. But, yeah, I think those, I mean, yeah, I have a lot of Ultra Boosts, a lot of NMDs, so I don't know. Oh, I actually have a pair of Inikis too that are pretty rad from like Pride Month. I think they released 2018 or 19. They're nice. Super rad. Like all fucking all colors of the rainbow and shit. Mm-hmm. All white. Super dope. I try not to wear those too much. But yeah. Yeah, I the Ultra that. Boosts are fucking super comfortable, man.
Yes, they
are. I
love
those shoes. I can just wear those every day. NMDs too. They're the shit. Just comfy. They look awesome. And yeah, there's just so many colors and patterns and things that, mm-hmm. you know, you can have fucking a whole closet full of those things.
Hell yeah.
So,
hell yeah.
This is a good conversation for both you guys because neither of you know this, but number one, Noah always walks in looking super fresh. Nice shoes, nice clean clothes. He's always made up. He's always ready to go. And same with Carlos. Carlos is always in like some super fresh jeans. He's got his chains on with his little medallions. Like, you guys are on the same level as far as guys on the road in fashion.
It's like your perspective. Like, dude, whatever's influenced you, you're rocking it somehow. Like,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? So absolutely. I think it's like a cool of, in a way, to carry yourself like that.
I've got two shoes that like make up my life, right? So, and they're both Nike. So,
ooh. Okay.
Nike Presto, my favorite shoe, probably my favorite shoe of all time.
Yeah, I have a pair of those. They're super comfortable.
So comfortable. And I love
Pegasus
the look
too,
of
shout out.
Yep. Yep. And the, what's the other? Oh, so the other one are these ones. Okay, so I bought these. I was in Japan with John and I went to a Nike store and it was like, everyone was making this huge deal about this. It was like release day for this shoe and it was called the Nike Sock Dart. Right. And it looked like the most comfortable shoe on the planet. And they were like, it's only releasing in Japan. It's not coming out in the States for like 5 months. And I was like, of course I have to buy it. Like,
I need this.
I
yeah.
mean, of course I
Once
have to
you
go
hear
home.
That.
Yeah. I was yeah. like, of course I have to spend $150 to go home with these. So I bought them. They were the most comfortable shoe I've ever worn. I brought them home, wore through those ones, and I was like, I got to get another pair. So I went, it was like, God, it was like 6 or 7 months later. And I was at a Nike store and I found a pair on the clearance rack at a Nike
no
store.
No way.
And they were like $30. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And I looked online and apparently like they just flopped in the States. Nobody wanted them. And like they had all these shoes and they were like they were just giving them away at outlet stores. So I bought like six pairs while I was there because like they're still the most comfortable shoe I've ever bought. So I was like, but I spent $160 on them in Japan and then I bought them over here. You can get them for like $33 right now, but they're so comfortable. You have to look them up. They're called the Nike Sock Dart.
And is it like it has like the built-in like ankle high elastic
no,
bit on it?
No, they're low top, but like and they're like slip-ins. But it's literally like the whole top and around is like sock material. They're the lightest shoe okay. you'll ever wear. But man, I love them. But I was just so bummed that I spent so much money and there was so much hype behind them. And apparently they came to the States and like they couldn't give them away. So they just like ended up on all these clearance racks. So I don't know.
That always happens though. I bought my first Hydro Flask for I think almost $100. And now you can get them for $30 at any REI. Or any Walmart.
Oh, isn't it great how life works?
Yeah.
You always got to wait for the sales, man. Sometimes the hype is not.
Joke was
not,
on.
Not at
joke
all.
Was on me.
That's why I have a girlfriend now, so she can look for the sales.
Well played.
Yeah.
Well played.
So it's a perk. It's a perk.
She is a Black Friday master.
So, no, is John's obviously like a huge sneaker guy, yeah?
John's shoe game is amazing.
Dude, yeah. I got to do some shows with the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, guys. Dead and Company. Yeah.
Dead and Company.
Yeah.
In Mexico.
Yep.
In 2018. And yeah, two things. Like when I saw John, I was like, holy shit, he's tall as fuck. Always wearing some badass like sneakers. Like all 4 or 5 days that we were there. I was like, I want all the shoes he's worn that I've seen him wear, you know?
I mean, his shoe game is insane. He
does he have like bags? Like, you know, what's it like? What's going on tour with the shoe game?
I mean, the shoe game has its own wardrobe cases. Like, yeah, like it's incredible. A lot of really cool shoes. Are you familiar with the clothing brand Visvim from Japan?
Yeah.
Yeah. So his Visvim shoe game is very, very hard. Very hard. They're just like beautifully crafted shoes and boots. They're incredible. Mm-hmm. But the Nike game is hard. Nike sent us, they're not the Marty McFlys, but it was like the first,
yes,
like zip ones. Like they sent us a prototype and
like those boots, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So they made a low top, they made a low top version that they were prototyping. So they sent us a pair like 3 days before me and him shot the music video for Still Feels Like Your Man. And there's like panda mm-hmm. bears and shit. And that like, it's a hilarious video, but he wore them in the video. So if you watch the video, he's wearing them in them and they like light up on the bottom and it's incredible. And they come with their own charger. They're insane. but lots of Nikes. He loves the Nike game.
Okay.
He had a few pairs of the sock darts. His Nike game is strong. Very, very strong. And he goes through phases. You know, he's got great boots too. I mean, his boot game is strong. So, but yeah, he is probably one of the best dressed people I've ever known.
Dude, I admire his fashion game big time for sure.
Yeah.
As well as music wise as well. But yeah, fashion sense is fucking spot on with that, dude.
100%.
There's no question that man's a legend. There's no question about it.
So besides John, who else have you worked for, dude?
Oh, like I said, I mean, I've had this reputation with young female pop singers. So, I mean, I've had, mm-hmm. I had Rachel Platten, Hailee Steinfeld. I did some BB Rex's stuff. I've got Ava Max right now. I did L King. Man, how many more?
God, the list goes on forever with this guy.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we had the Blues Travelers guys, you know, that was fun. And John and I did some stuff with Story of the Year and they were fun guys. That was a fun time.
A little change of scenery.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was early on. That was right after I did Sounds. It was some anniversary of their album and we did the second half of Warped Tour that year. I think it was Warped Tour 14. And the Used did the first half, and then we did the second half. And I was actually a guitar tech and a TM on that one. And I use guitar tech very loosely, like I changed strings, and that was the extent of what I did. And also tried to repair a bunch of Black Star amps, and that was a nightmare.
Yeah, I bet that circuitry is tight.
The problem we had, it was like. It was almost like right when they came over because they didn't even have a rep in America yet. Like I was talking to some guy named Ollie in Australia, but you know how, and I'm going to sound like an idiot because I don't know anything about like tech world guitar stuff. But you know how the back of the Black Stars have VGN cables that go out to the switcher,
mm-hmm.
right? So.
So if anyone doesn't know that, that's a large, I think it's a 7-pin cable that goes out to the pedal that switches channels, just so you guys know who are listening. Yeah.
And you have to spin the screws on the sides.
Throughout the sides.
Exactly, yeah, right? Yeah. And obviously, Warped Tour, like the roadies are all very professional and are very careful with your gear. So like, they would just yank the cables. Oh yeah. So they were like, they sheared off like three shows into the Warped Tour. We couldn't get them changed because there were none in America. So I was gaff taping them in place every single night. And Ryan, the guitar player, would do backflips off his amp during the show. So I would have to run behind the amp and actually hold the cable in place while he did his backflip. So it didn't, like, it was a nightmare. It was a mess.
Wow. So many layers to that.
But
guitar tech job.
Let me tell you, like, I was like, you could, we still laugh about it now. You could ask the guys, like, I am the worst guitar tech on the planet. Like, I give props to every guitar tech because I don't know how they do it.
Thank you. There we go.
I faked it so hard. And luckily, nobody died. Nobody got electrocuted. We made it through every show. So it could have been worse. But, I mean,
strings were in tune.
Strings were in tune. I figured that out. So
that's pretty much the end result that you need. You know?
Exactly.
The guitar is not stolen or broken. Guitars are in tune.
That is, okay, for everyone listening, that is so not job done for a guitar tech.
Right,
that is not even close to the job for a guitar tech.
You just drink coffee and tune guitars, right? Wow. This is getting harsh now.
So I have a question for you. You've been with a lot of massive artists, a lot of amazing people. What is your dream tour right now? Like, if you could, and let's put COVID aside, what would be your dream run that you could hop on?
I don't know. I think this next Ava run, probably.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a big, big run. I love her team. And I think that would probably, that's what I'm most looking forward to, I think.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it's awesome. It's actually coming up and actually in your life. That's a pretty amazing and an unreal thing to have. Like, the tour you want to be on is the one that's next.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm.
That's a good feeling. Yeah.
It is a good feeling. COVID has been weird, man, but it's been good. It's given me a chance to kind of sit back and reflect on life, mm-hmm. which is, as you guys know, it's not something you get to do a whole lot, you know? We're on the road and, you know, the artist has, you know, 17 hours of my day. And then I have about an hour before I go to sleep. So you don't get a lot of time to think and reflect while you're on the road.
Right.
And then you get caught into a weird, strange storm of jumping from one tour to the next, because you've got one of those years that, you know, you may just work.
Go.
Exactly. You may work 10 and a half months that year. So it's, you know, a year passes and you're like, what the hell?
And what just happened? Yeah.
So this is the longest in 11 years I've been home. So it's been kind of nice to have a chance to reflect back on everything that's happened and kind of reevaluate things. It was, you know, it was like everybody else. It was panic mode for the first couple of, right. I'd say 2 months for me, where like, I was like, oh God, like what the hell? But, you know, when I kind of got over that initial shock, it's been really nice to just kind of sit back and kind of just think about things. Listen, this year is a shit show. You've got to take the small wins where you can find them.
For sure. And I don't know if you're still single, because, I mean, you shouldn't be because you're amazing. But I know for Los and I, Los is married. I've been with my girlfriend for 2.5 years now. And we've never spent this much time with our significant others in our entire lives. We're trying to adapt as best as we can. And it's been all right. You know, we still have our good days and bad days. It's tough to set aside our alone time. That's a big part of it, is knowing when we need to be in different rooms or when we need to, you know, go out and take a drive alone, because it's under 1,000 square feet here. So it's not massive. So that's been a struggle, but she hasn't killed me yet. I haven't killed her. So I'd say it's going pretty well.
That's a win.
Yeah.
Carlos, talk to me. What's the married life like?
Really good, honestly, dude. Mostly for the fact that we got a puppy back in January when we got the apartment.
Stella.
That's a win.
And she's been like a freaking godsend, dude. Like, just a total blessing to have during this time. And also, like, if I would have been, I would have been touring up to like at least right now or like, you know, end of September-ish. That mm-hmm. was the plan, and I would have missed her entire growth, basically. Like, she's changed so much since she was like a puppy till
her
now.
Entire puppyhood.
She's made being home so much fun and amazing.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
It's been cool because, I mean, me and my wife, before moving to Florida, we basically lived with roommates in both houses that we lived in. And, dude, it's given us a chance to finally, like, really connect, like, without roommates. And also, like, on top of that, spend all this time together. And also, like Chris said, it's important to just figure out, like, when, like, we're both very, like, I need my space people. Mm-hmm. So... And we can read each other pretty well. So it's, you know, I'll go and take the dog to the park or just go on a drive
right.
or go to the pool, whatever. Like, but figuring that out was like key. But it was good also to just have like some hard conversations that we just didn't have last year. Cause mm-hmm. like you said, last year for me was that year of like, I went on tour for like 10 months and It was good, dude. I feel like we've been, like, now this month we're in the best place we've ever been as a couple. We've grown a lot, and that's why I'm kind of thankful for 2020.
Yeah.
In weird ways.
Career-wise, it sucks, but, you know, there's more to that than in life also. And also giving me a fucking huge eye-opener. Like, dude, all my income was coming from touring, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it made me realize like that can obviously just stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I've been just making music and painting again a lot more. And yeah, I've had some sales, like some commissions.
Yeah. Carlos got his first song paid for today.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Carlos.
And sold my first song today.
Congratulations.
So, dude, thank you, man. I'm super stoked. And dude, yeah, it's great, man. It feels great to see like results, you know, 3 months in basically.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
I'd say one of the hardest parts that I've thought about is the podcast life. Cause in a small apartment like this, I'm in the living room, my desk, or in the main area of the apartment. So Sarah has to be quarantined in that bedroom while we do these podcasts. And that's, I think the most challenging part. I feel really bad for her cause she's just stuck going between the bedroom and the bathroom. So you have no other area to do this recording. So that's one of the things.
I always say you got to bring perspective into life, man. Could be worse.
Oh, it could be so much worse.
But same, like I'm in my bedroom. So like I have like basically my studio in my side of the bed wall here. And then that's my wife's side.
See, I'm just rocking full communal space over here.
You are just brave out there, dude. But I already have my entire record collection and fucking so much shit out there in the living room. I can't be like, oh, I'm going to set up the studio out here too. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Chris, you got any other questions?
I think I'm ready to wrap it. This has been amazing.
We hit the bagels. We hit coffee. We hit Snickers.
I mean, we hit a lot.
And you're going to be, you'll be on next week, obviously, because you're a recurring guest now.
Yeah. I mean, I think you need to write it into the contract.
I like that idea. I'm all about it.
I'm just going to drop in all the time and just maybe I'll ask random questions. I got to come up with like, I need a quirky like bit. So I'm going to work on that, and it's just going to be a surprise. I'm just going to show up randomly sometimes and, you know, put you on the spot.
I love it. Fucking A, perfect. So everyone, look forward to Noah Brown coming back on. Thank you all so much for listening. Well, thank you so much for being on. We appreciate it. And we will see you guys in the next episode.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you. See you next week.